It may seem striking that the deaths of Molly Maggia, Helen Quinlan, Irene Rudolph and Catherine O'Donnell do not feature in this correspondence. But all four women had quit their jobs at the plant well before their deaths, some several years before, and it seems the firm was unconcerned about and possibly ignorant of their deaths. If it had chanced to hear of them, it was only Irene's case that had been attributed to her work, and as the doctors thought it phossy jaw, and the firm knew no phosphorus was in the paint, it could rest easy that the suspicions were unfounded. From their point of view, Irene was an orphan anyway, whose parents had died young. With a genetic inheritance like that, she was probably never long for this world. As for the others, if anyone at the firm had investigated the mysterious deaths of their former employees, officially, Catherine had died of pneumonia, Helen of Vincent's angina, and as for Molly Maggia, well, everyone knew she had died from syphilis. The firm had employed over 1,000 women during its lifetime. Four deaths from such a number was probably to be expected. The company therefore concluded confidently, "We do not recognise that there is any hazard in the occupation." But by this time, their former dial painters disagreed. On 19th of January, there was a meeting held in Dr. Barry's office with at least Catherine Sharp, the Smith sisters and Marguerite Carlo present. The girls talked over their identical conditions with their increasingly concerned dentist. "We discussed employment at the radium plant," Catherine remembered. "There was some talk of industrial disease." The girls agreed. There was something going on about this thing. Yet, what could they do about it? Catherine had already complained to the authorities and nothing had come of it. Even though the evidence pointed to some problem at the plant, no one really knew what the cause was. And much more pressing for the women than the cause, anyway, was searching for a cure, or at least some relief. Their health was their primary concern. Hazel Couser was by now almost constantly on palliative drugs because her pain was agonising. Marguerite Carlo had come to Barry hoping for treatment of her jaw, but she was to be disappointed. "I refuse to operate on the girl," Barry later said, "for the reason that previous experience with Irene Rudolph and Catherine Sharp taught me that the moment there was any operative procedure attempted, the case would flare up and would be much worse than it was at the time I saw her." And so, although the girls were racked by pain from their teeth, he refused to remove them. All he could offer the panicked women was to keep them under observation. He couldn't see what else he could do. He did ask others for help, consulting a highly skilled Newark physician, Dr. Harrison Martland. But when Martland examined the girls, he too was puzzled. "After seeing several girls in the dental office," Martland later wrote, "I lost interest in the matter." The girls were on their own. Just down the road at the Orange Orthopaedic Hospital, Grace Fryer wasn't having much more luck. Just as she'd promised her parents, she had kept her appointment with Dr. Robert Humphreys to have her painful back and foot examined. Humphreys was the head doctor at the hospital, an exceedingly high-grade man. A Canadian in his 40s, Humphreys listened carefully to Grace's complaints and then diagnosed muscle-bound feet and chronic arthritis. He strapped her up for several weeks but noted with concern that there was very little improvement. Humphreys was treating another young woman that spring by the name of Jenny Stocker. He didn't connect her with Grace Fryer, who worked in a bank, but Jenny had been a dial painter until 1922 and she and Grace had worked together during the war. She had a very peculiar condition of the knee that had been mystifying Humphreys ever since he had taken her case. So many doctors across New Jersey were confused that first month of 1924, but they didn't share notes, and so each case was viewed in isolation. As January drew to a close, Theo and Hazel Couser decided that they would look elsewhere for treatment. New Jersey was just a short distance from New York City, where some of the best doctors and dentists in the world had their practices. On 25th of January, Hazel, bravely swallowing down her pain, made the journey into the Big Apple for treatment at the office of Dr. Theodore Bloom.